Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome to Break Through the Noise with me, Jennifer Neely, Director of Digital Services at Eastwick Communications. Every week we chat with an influencer to see what makes them tick. Today on this lovely, sunny, beautiful Bay Area day, Friday, March 13th, my guest will be Michael Brito, who's the web strategist for Intel, as well as a blogger, and I can tell you he's held in very high regard by the social media community. So we wait for him to call in. The types of things I'll be asking him about really revolve around community. One of the things at Eastwick that we work a lot with is the B2B social media segment, and really consider ourselves experts in that arena. And I thought it would be interesting to chat with Michael as he himself is dealing in that space. And on the community side especially, you know, some of the definitions or distinctions that can make or break how much a community is thriving. One of the things that we were even at work talking about yesterday was the ability to turn those that are in your community very, you know, against a particular brand, or maybe they're not in your community, but tracking them in other communities and bringing them into the fold because they can be some of your biggest advocates in the future. So those are the kinds of things that we want to talk about. And I also like getting at, you know, sort of the personal journey that people go through in order to get to social media. It's such a new and emerging area. There have been community managers around for a while, and, you know, not a lot of them have stayed community managers. So, you know, sort of what is the trajectory for them and what do they have in mind? Is it blogging? Is it something else? And it looks like we have Michael on the line now.
I am here.
Hi, are you with us?
I am here. Sorry I'm late.
No, that is no problem. I'm so glad that we have you. I've given a little bit of an introduction about who you are and who you work for, but I'd love it if you would elaborate and tell us more about yourself.
Sure. Well, thank you again for this time, Jennifer. I really appreciate it. So I'm Michael Brito, and I work for Intel, and I've been here for almost a year now. And I've worked for previous companies like Yahoo and HP, and where I've always been kind of around the social sphere, if you will. And by nature, I'm a social guy. You know, I think I have a lot of friends, and you know, I'm very talkative. And I think that's one reason why I was held back in the second grade is because I talk too much. But so
a little bit of personal history there. I love that.
Yeah, exactly. So part of what I do is I look at Intel and I say, okay. Traditionally, Intel has been a really tough time in talking to consumers, and I think part of the reason why is it's an ingredient brand, and it's very easy for a Dell and HP or even an Apple to talk to consumers because they're sitting in front of each other all day every day. Intel has had that challenge for a long time, and part of my responsibility is to really figure out opportunities and ways that we can talk with the consumer and make Intel relevant again. And there's no better way of doing that than through social media, which is what I do. So social media, and part of that is, you know, how do we build Intel.com to be more social? I serve as the managing editor of our corporate blog, and I also look at opportunities within Facebook and other external third-party sites where we can extend that Intel voice.
So one of the things I was just mentioning before you joined was about the difference between B2B social networking and B2C. Now, in your space, do you see it as a B2B or a B2C? I mean, how do you define business to business, and how do you define business to consumer?
Well, I would definitely say it's B2C.
Mm-hmm.
And that's traditionally my experience is talking to consumers and not necessarily business professionals. However, you know, Intel does have that conversation. So we have a place called OpenPort, which is a community for IT professionals, and we have IT guys from HP, from, you know, SAP, Oracle, all contributing and participating on an Intel-hosted community, and it's talking about software, hardware, and everything under the sun, which I have no idea what it is, just because I'm not familiar with that space. But when I think of B2B, I think of, you know, software, hardware developers communicating and talking about best practices and, you know, teaming up for joint marketing programs, et cetera. And from my perspective, it's about influencing user behavior and hopefully purchase as they go out and they buy that new PC or Mac. Remember that, you know, what is inside is Intel. And one thing that I try to, illustrate when I'm talking to people is, you know, when I have a Dell at home. I have a Dell laptop, and you know, when I go home and I look at my Dell, you know, sometimes I think of a friend of mine. His name is Richard, and he works for Dell, and he's on Twitter, and he's blogging, and he's very active in the community. And so I have that one-to-one relationship with Richard, as with other people from various companies. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to really humanize Intel's brand and make it more relevant as, you know, as people go out and start looking for new computers or laptops.
That's really interesting when you think about it. I was an English major, so I think about, like, the personification of, you know, an object is a really interesting way of thinking about social media, but it definitely applies. I mean, I think of that, you know, in terms of other things that I own, too, and who they might represent. I even have that with my – so I work on a Dell laptop as well as on a Mac, but I have a MacBook, the white one, you know, the little MacBook that isn't as robust. My personal Mac is one of the gray ones. So it's like the difference between work and home. So, oh, that's the work, you know, that's heavy stuff, you know. So it's kind of funny that the devices in our head that kind of click into place.
Right.
But I wanted to kind of step back a bit and talk about, you know, kind of projects that you worked on in the past. You touched on a little bit of them, or of the companies anyway, that led to your social media role. Because I think one of the things that's really interesting right now is those of us that have these specifically charted social media roles are kind of, I think we're kind of few and far between in terms of having a title that says social media in it. But I think there are lots of people doing social media and product roles and other roles. So I think there's a lot of people that, I think there's a segment of people that definitely aspire to have, you know, a social media focused only position. And so they always are interested in hearing about the path. So I think we'd love to hear about your path. I mean, how did you get from where you are now to, you know, from where you've been in the past?
Well, I've always been traditionally in my history, my job employment history, I've been a direct marketer. So, you know, I've managed search campaigns, and I was very, you know, had to be very analytical, and, you know, it was all about purchase and click, click, click. And, you know, I want to say in 2005, maybe early 2006, while at HP, you know, one of our general managers of IPG was, his name is Vijay, and he was sat on the board of Yahoo. And he had this meeting and said, you know, we need to really embrace social media. And so I took that as kind of a head, you know, a thumbs up to say, hey, go out and try new things. I kind of created the position myself. I was hired to manage search. I basically, you know, talked to my manager and I said, look, we need to engage. We need to have conversations. We need to start a blog. And before I got to do any of that stuff, it was about evangelism. And so I had this 30-page deck. And I would go and I would evangelize social media. And I would train people very high level, you know, what are the characteristics of social media? What is Web 2.0? And at that point in time, it was still new, and I would argue it's still a little new. And so I created that role for myself. Now, unfortunately, I wasn't able to see a lot of the things that I was evangelizing come to fruition because my time there, you know, had ended. But, you know, I look back at HP, and they're doing a lot in that space. And, you know, I'm not taking full credit, but I think I had something to do with kind of a change in culture. And I'll give you a quick example. I was in a meeting with some very traditional marketers who were at HP for many years. And, you know, I was talking to them about starting a blog, and I really thought it was important to do that. And one of the first areas of feedback that I got was, well, you know, what about a negative comment? I mean, what if they say something bad and it hurts the brand? And so I immediately went to YouTube, and I searched for HP, and I showed the entire room all these user-generated videos about HP, and one video was quite funny. Basically, it was this guy who was pissed off at HP's customer service and because his HP printer wasn't working. And from his apparently he had a friend because they were filming him, and he was on the second story of an apartment building, and he threw it off the second story, and it kind of blew
my
up.
Lord.
It was pretty funny, and I said, well, you know, that to me is a negative comment, so... You know, and now they have a ton of blogs, and they have, you know, wikis, and, you know, they're really engaged with the community. So that to me was a way, you know, an opportunity that I found, and I jumped on it. And that's kind of what catapulted me into this kind of, you know, this new space. At that point, I went to Yahoo, and my philosophy for doing that was, you know, Yahoo is social media. I mean, it's losing share in search, and everybody knows that. But it has a huge community. And when I was told that I can work on platforms like Yahoo Answers, Yahoo Groups, Yahoo 360, and some other projects, I was ecstatic because it was a way to really belong and really focus on community building.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I was laid off from Yahoo, and that's how I got here at Intel. But that's really how I just took it upon myself to really spread the word and evangelize it, and that's essentially what I did full time. And they even hired somebody to manage search for me at HP because I was so busy evangelizing.
So there's sort of this thing about, you know, I think people assume all social media people will say, because that's what they call me, among other things. So social media people are early adopters. Would you have said at that time that you were an early adopter?
I think so. And I think that's an accurate statement.
Yeah, I think so. What are some of the first things that you remember using, like handheld devices or things like that?
Well, it's funny because, you know, in 2005, I started my blog in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
2005, I didn't have a blog yet, so I was evangelizing social media and not using it. I was basically saying, you know what, we need to engage with the community. We need to use tools. We need to focus. We need to have conversations with people. And I wasn't, you know, at that point when I first started doing this, doing it myself. You know, I think I had a MySpace page. and that was to the extent of it. And it wasn't until, you know, I think early, you know, late 2007 when Twitter started to, you know kind of, I think it's blowing up now, but when more people started using Twitter is when I started using Twitter as well. And, you know, now it's like I try to focus and not use too many tools because it's really, you know, I feel like I have ADD and I have, you know, it's really tough unless content's being pulled dynamically in. It's tough for me to go in and update different profiles, but. I would say that most people who use social media are early adopters.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to know kind of what people use. So you got to tell us, what do you use for your cell phone and organizational tools? What are your favorites for your?
That's
personal
funny life? That you asked that. I specifically bought the iPhone just for Twitter and Facebook. Because I'll go on the record and say this, the phone in the iPhone is horrible, and it's not AT&T because I also have a Bold for work, and it's also an AT&T, and I use that, and I never get dropped calls. The phone is phenomenal. But I use the iPhone for the applications and Facebook and Twitter, and that's all. I don't make calls on that phone. I use Twitter. Twitter is something I use daily, and I'm trying to use it more. I use FriendFeed, but FriendFeed was a matter of really just creating the account and then linking everything together.
Yeah.
And, you know, it gets pulled in dynamically. I haven't logged in like months.
I know.
And then Facebook.
Robert Scoble saying, you know, the chat rooms on FriendFeed could be so valuable. But I think there was a period when Twitter was going down so much, maybe in October of last year. And search was disabled still for that period of time that it was disabled. And I think there was an opportunity there, and for whatever reason, I don't think it really ever happened.
Right. And, you know, it's funny because I rarely log into Twitter. I rarely go to Twitter.com. I use Twirl or TweetDeck, and on my iPhone I use Twitterlater, which is a great tool.
Yeah, I use Twitterberry on my BlackBerry. And I, you know, I use the Facebook app and keep in touch with my friends. I mean, I think there are frustrations with any application, but it's definitely Twitterberry is better than the one for Facebook, I would say, just because
right.
if someone sends you an email, you want to be able to reply, but yet if somebody responds on your wall, you can reply. So it's just kind of the frustration of, you know, the different capabilities that I have, or it has. But I wanted to talk a little bit about kind of, so you talked about being kind of a social person, and, you know, we probably met face-to-face for the first time at a forum that you were actually the moderator of for a boot camp session. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about, you know, how you're out there speaking and when you do, or if you have something coming up. But,
sure.
I mean, I've definitely seen you being a social animal out there. You're definitely hardwired for it.
I know, and it's funny that you say that. So it was agency boot camp in San Francisco is when we met, and I think it was early last year or mid, maybe it was summertime last year. Anyhow, you know, I really want to position myself. Well, first of all, I enjoy speaking in front of large groups. You know, I may speak at 2 or 3 conferences a year, and, you know, I'd love to do the Chris Brogan thing and speak at every conference known to man, but I just can't, just because with work and, you know, travel being cut and all that. So I try to do 3 or 4 a year, and it's good because I like to share, specifically at it for what we're doing at Intel, I like to share with what we're doing. I don't think we get a lot of credit for the things that we're doing. And to give you a quick example, Mashable had this thing on that they wrote about how, you know, top brands on Twitter. And, you know, Intel wasn't mentioned. And I was a little butthurt, I guess, or offended. And part of it was because, you know, we do a lot. I mean, there were a lot of people at Intel who are on Twitter. And we're not like Zappos or anybody, or we're not even at that level where Dell is, where they're, you know, they have a team of people where it's their full-time job to really go out there and listen and respond to the community. But, you know, we have a team of people who are, and we're not necessarily on the same team, but we are engaged with social media and we use these tools to communicate. And so, you know, One reason why I like to speak is, number one, it builds my personal brand, right? Because, I mean, we all have egos to an extent, and it kind of feeds into my ego. And then also really to evangelize and talk and share. And I love sharing and helping to educate, because my biggest pet peeve is this, you know, the rise of social media has caused like this absurd amount of experts who have kind of arisen on the scene. And, you know, anybody can be an expert today. You just put it in your profile, right? Your LinkedIn profile, and now you're an expert. But more importantly is, you know, I think somebody who has actually planned, executed, were held accountable, iterated, planned again, launched, and not necessarily in that particular order, but who have, you know, dealt with social media and is held accountable for the results, those are the people, and I don't consider myself an expert, let me just say that, because I still have a lot to learn. And so, you know, evangelism and really helping people understand social media is what I love to do. And I think that I have a lot to teach somebody, especially somebody who's, you know, maybe at a smaller company and they want to launch some social media initiatives, and they don't know where to start. And so I think a lot of the consultants and agencies, they have great perspectives and they have a great point of view, but they have a different point of view than from somebody that's myself who actually works internally and can say, okay, well, number one, you have to, you know, there's legal concerns. And number two, you got to get customer support involved. Number three, here's what I did, et cetera, to kind of reach that hurdle or cross that bridge. And so that's really what I'm passionate about, is sharing and helping educate and learning at the same time.
Absolutely. It was funny because I was just saying before you joined how yesterday we were having an internal discussion about, you know, my clear direction that we need to make sure we're going after the people that complain the most for any of our particular brands, and track them, find them, and try to convert them into people that will try the product again, try the company again, whatever it might be that we are helping to promote. And Seth Godin actually wrote about it on his blog today. And so one of the principals of my company was like, boy, you were right on yesterday. But
awesome.
I mean, I think most people, you know, make that connection. I mean, if somebody takes the time, like in your example, to throw a printer off of a roof, that's pretty dramatic. They care. I mean, they're trying to let you know that they care. So I think, you know, you know, I've had that background of being at a company. I ended up in social media because I was an early adopter. I loved all these things. I was doing them without having this title. I briefly worked in product, and the person that was doing all of our social media strategy at our agency left the agency, and so suddenly the agency didn't have that competency anymore. So it became another hat for me to put on to be the person that was evangelizing to the customer base that we had there, which was a small online video startup. And so, you know, it was great because, I mean, it was absolutely, you know, getting all of the good, the bad, the ugly, and seeing what was really happening out there. And then trying to get the folks in the company. I mean, actually, the evangelism on the company side might have been harder in that example because a lot of people just didn't want to listen because they're like, oh, new product's coming or we're iterating on that. But, you know, in the meantime, you have to be answering the questions.
Right.
And I think, you know, one of the things that I'm interested in, too, I mean, we have a couple of open source clients, and I love getting involved in their communities. Or user forums. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about is this area for agency people, I think, in particular, can be very scary. What's the difference? I get this question all the time. What's the difference between a community and a user forum? And I said, well, wait, I'm going to ask Michael and let him give you a definition. So how do you define the two?
You know, I kind of have a weird point of view because community to me is a concept. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a micro community on Twitter. I would argue that people who follow me, it's a community. I would also say that a blog is also a community, right? And you don't necessarily need profiles for it to be a community. I mean, if you look at the definition of community, I don't know what it is exactly, but it's you know, where one or more, you know, people are gathered somewhere, either online or in person, and share common interests. And so when you're looking at, like, capabilities and, you know, tools, you know, when I think of community, of course, I maybe think of Jive or ClearSpace or, you know, there's hundreds of them out there, and versus a user forum. And, you know, I think they're both, they can be both be communities, right? It's just a matter of functionality, right, depending on what you need or what you want. And I would say if it's a community, you know, if you want multiple people being able to publish content, you may look at tools that would allow for that. Tools, I hate using the term social networking, but I mean, for lack of better words, I'll use it. You know, tools that are out there that are like off-the-shelf social networks, right, that allows people to create profiles and add RSS feeds and write a little blog. And it may even also have forums feature built in. I'm thinking like MySpace, right? So MySpace has a blog functionality. They have a group, you know, MySpace groups. And when I think of forum, I think of, if you have a chance, you know, go to Yahoo Finance. And they have forums on Yahoo Finance, which are extremely outdated, but hundreds of people, I mean, if not thousands of people, use that to talk about stocks and finance. Most people don't know that, but it's a thriving community, right? But they don't have individual profiles.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it really just depends, you know, I think the biggest difference it really is functionality, but I think they can both be attributed back to the concept of creating community.
So here's a kind of literal question. What's the difference in what they look like or how you interface with them in terms of the UI aspect?
Well, yeah, I think there's definitely off-the-shelf services that allow you to create forums or user forums, right? And there's one that I frequent called Digital Point. So it's forums.digitalpoint.com. And you can go in there and you can learn about any topic. So it's very good to categorize information. So I can go in and if I'm looking up, you know, Google or some stuff on Yahoo or search engines in general or, you know, SEO, I can go in there and I can find information. It's very easy to do that. It's not so easy to go in and find people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or people of similar interests. When I think of a community or a social network or, you know, I think that to me is around people. Here, the core focus is people versus content. And I think user forums are content focused versus people focused.
Interesting, because I think that's one of the, you know, that's one of the ways that you can start evangelizing, obviously, is in the user forum. But for, in my world, a lot of, when I first started at Eastwick, which was in August of last year, I, you know, was asking people questions about both analytics as well as analytics in user forums. And people kind of blankly stared at me like, what do you mean? You know, and kind of how is that relevant? So I think, you know, explaining that and making sure that the team is completely equipped to understand those things is really, really important. And one of the recommendations that I do make to some of our clients that have these user forums are about incentivizing the community, tracking their behavior. And I wondered if you had any thoughts on that. It doesn't have to be specific to Intel, because I know that there can be proprietary issues involved. But, you know, just in general, the whole idea of what Dell did when they realized that some guy named Joe was answering 20,000 support questions correctly in a day and brought in a company called Bunchball to help them using software to identify these people and use non-monetary incentives.
And to sum up the question, what is it?
Well, how have you seen that? How important is that to you? I mean, have you worked with anything like that where there's an incentive program to continue people's interest in the community or to, you know, further grow the community to bring more people in because there are these incentives?
Sure. Actually, great question. I have a great example too. So first of all, quickly, I just want to say that when somebody's thinking about building a community, the first area of focus should be just that and building the community and not monetization. The minute that you try to monetize a community before it's thriving and full of content and full of people who enjoy being there, you're quickly going to turn everybody away and people are going to hate you. So... And that's what Twitter's doing, right? Twitter has built this huge community, and they haven't figured out yet how to monetize, right? There's companies that are trying to monetize through Twitter, which it's not working. So, and I think Facebook was something similar. I don't think they started serving ads right away. I mean, they built their community, and then they monetize it. So back to Yahoo. So, you know, the whole reason why I went there was because of the thriving community. Part of the initiative was to, I mean, if you think about it, and, you know, Yahoo, I mean, their business focus is selling advertising in their properties. And in order to sell advertising or page views, they need to increase those page views. And the way you increase those page views is you get users who are involved in the community to come back and use the product, whether it's Yahoo Mail, Yahoo Answers, or whatever. And so one thing that we did in the community team at Yahoo was we figured out that it didn't always take monetary incentives for somebody to participate. In fact, if you just recognized them and provided them with some type of recognition award, that was enough. And so, you know, we built in mechanisms in Yahoo that basically rewarded people who used the product the most. And so we were able to track, because everybody's logged into Yahoo when they use it, right? So you can look at the metrics very easily. We were able to track, how many people actually answer questions on Yahoo Answers? How many people ask questions? Who are the top 10%? You know, if it's the top 10%, maybe let's give them a badge that says that they are, you know, a top contributor. Or number two, if they're a Yahoo Mail user and they're sending and receiving emails all day long, let's give them extra bandwidth to store emails online. So those are ideas of where we, you know, gave the – and the funny thing is some people who used the product never even knew they were part of this rewards program just because they didn't pay attention. So another thing that we did was we reached out to like 10 or 15 users of these communities and reached out to them personally. And we flew them out to Yahoo, and they got to meet the CEO and several high-level executives. We had lunch and dinner with them. We brought them, kind of wine and dine them. Talk to them about the roadmap for some of these products and gave them kind of insight as to what to expect, and then we asked them for their feedback. That, to me, creates brand advocacy because all of a sudden this is just some random guy in New Jersey or Florida, or a woman, you know, a mother in Nebraska who's a big Yahoo user. Now she's all of a sudden helped drive product innovation. So that to us was huge. And, you know, we also had monthly roundtable calls where we would, you know, send them swag, Yahoo shirts and you know, hats and things like that, little trinkets. And then we'd get them on a conference call once a month and say, hey, this is what we're planning to do. What are your thoughts? And get their feedback that way.
That's great. I think we might need to fly some people out to the Bay Area just to save from the snow.
Nice.
So, you know, in terms of, you know, one of the aspects of being a social media manager, for lack of a better category, is, you know, how in this climate of reduced cost for travel, as you mentioned earlier, neither one of us are obviously at South by Southwest today.
And I'm sad about that.
I am too. Yeah, I am too. And so is my company because, you know, as I am responsible, I'm the single person responsible at my company for helping with professional or doing the professional development courses that teach the agency how to have an integrated social media strategy and approach to every client account, as well as indoctrinate our clients about the best practices and some of the things you're talking about how the customer comes first and how you show that online and the kind of activities, behavior, tone, and all that that goes with it and some of the trainings that we do. And, you know, one of the things I worry about and I've talked, you know, with different people about is how do you get inspired when we're not able to gather? So for me, the example is last year, Web 2.0 Expo. Hugely inspiring just to be around every, you know, all these, you know, for lack of a better term, geeks, you know, the social media geeks that are just living and breathing this all day long and to kind of be immersed in it. And this year that may not be possible. How are you dealing with that? Because I know, I mean, I'm using different strategies to try to make sure I'm on top of the latest things, but also the inspiration piece. So you can read something and learn something new, but it's that inspiration to bring to your company. How are you finding that?
I mean, I'm pretty involved in several different projects, right? So, I mean, I sit on a board for a social media club, and we don't get together as much as I'd like to, and it's hard to be involved when we're working full-time and stuff like that. And I'm also pretty involved with a company called IZEA, which is, you know, a social media marketing company, and, you know, you know, I have an equity position in that company, and, you know, it's great to get together and talk and bounce ideas off of each other. And, you know, that's the great thing about social media, right, is, you know, a lot of times you can't go and meet up at the Web 2.0 Expo or South by Southwest or, you know, this conference or that conference. It, you know, and that's one thing why I love using Twitter. Is, you know, it allows me to engage with people. I mean, if you think, you know, I look back at my own life, right, you know, and I'm a dad, married, two daughters, and I live a pretty basic life. I mean, there's nothing sexy about my life. It's just very, you know, ordinary, if you will. And so using these social media tools allows me to meet with other colleagues who share the same interests and to bounce ideas, ask questions, answer questions. So I find that's where I find my inspiration is from my friends and colleagues online.
Mm-hmm.
And that's of course it's much better in person. I'd much rather be at South by Southwest right now having this conversation, you know, in Austin somewhere.
Oh, thanks, Michael.
With you though, that's what I was saying. I mean, you and I mean, having this conversation.
It would be having it at South by Southwest, yes.
Totally. And so, you know, but, you know, understanding that the economic climate is, you know, still a little scary and not showing any signs of improving. Well, the market was actually up today. That's good. You know, it's great to be able to communicate with people, whether it be through Facebook. Let me give you a quick example. So, you know, I wrote a post yesterday for Intel, and it was like, you know, my computer chronology, right? So my first computer was an Apple IIe, and I kind of went through all my computers that I've owned, and now I have a HP with a Centrino 2. And so I posted it, and then I started people started responding on Twitter and even leaving comments. So then I posted something yesterday saying, hey, you know, tell me what your first computer was and what you have now, and I'll republish this on our Intel blogs, and I'll link to your site. So I'm really trying to build community, and I can do that, you know, virtually, and I think that's phenomenal. And I think, you know, it's not new a concept because we've been doing it for a long time, but that's kind of where I find my inspiration.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
And e-learning. And by the way, we have conversations with Dell, you know, so we had a huge conference call with, you know, Richard at Dell and Bob and Lionel and the team there, and it was the Intel folks, and we just talked about best practices. And even myself being working for Intel, I blog on Dell properties. And I think that's a great way to show leadership in the industry is, you know, for Intel to have that conversation on a Dell blog. It'd be great to have it on an HP blog too. And that may come soon. And the same thing with ASUS, which is a computer manufacturer. So that's where the inspiration comes from.
Great. Well, it sounds like you're very inspired then.
I am very inspired. And I'm getting these little tweets from Julie, who's making fun of me. She's
so
listening.
Tell us on Twitter right now. So you got to tell us what your handle is so people can follow you.
It's kind of strange, and I just thought I was creative one day. So my last name is Brito. It's a Portuguese last name, but my grandfather's Puerto Rican because they immigrated from there to there years ago. And, you know, so my last name is actually pronounced Brito. So you got to roll the R, Brito. But some people just call Brito or Brido or things like that. But my Twitter handle is Britopian, Britopian. That's also my website, Britopian.com. So I just figured it was catchy. It's not like a MichaelBrito.com, but it was something different, and I've kind of stuck with it. What works for me.
And I like the Portuguese reference. My mom is a Ferreira, so, you know.
Sweet.
The Smith of Portugal. Got to get the little Latin in there, you know.
Yep.
In any event, I was curious, too. I mean, it sounds like you're out there all the time. I know that you are anyway, myself. But I want to know, I always ask this, what's the number one question you're asked about when you're out and about speaking or giving a training or whatever it is you're doing? The number one question.
How do I do what you do? I mean, I honestly have a great job. I mean, and I'm not just throwing marketing fluff out there. I mean, Intel is a great company, and I'm in a role where I pretty much do what I want to do. And to give you a quick example, I was in Malibu last Friday, in the home of Brooke Burke. Brooke Burke she's kind of a celebrity. She was on E! Entertainment or something.
Dancing with the Stars.
Dancing with the Stars. That's her claim to fame. And I spent 2 hours with her interviewing her about technology and how it's helped build her kind of career. And she's also, you know, launching a kind of a social network for moms. So we talked about that. She kind of called it out on Twitter. She's on Twitter. You know, so I gave her some tips on Twitter. She has like 150,000 followers, and she's only following one person, and it's not me. So I told her about that. I go, so you need to follow me, too, so I can get some, you know, ego points. But so, you know, that and it's all for content. We took video. I asked her questions, and we're going to put it up on Intel.com. I'm going to blog about it. And, you know, I get to do things like that. I was, you know, hanging with MC Hammer and CES. You know, I get all kinds of products sent to me from our partners like Dell and HP and ASUS, and I review them and on behalf of my perspective, and I post about it and I talk about it. So, you know, that's the number one question is, how do I get to do what you do? And I think part of the answer is I'm lucky, right? I mean, I live in Silicon Valley. I live a mile from Intel. I live across the street from Sun Microsystems. I live down the block from HP. Yahoo is 3 miles up the freeway. Google is 5 miles up the freeway. So I'm in the middle of the heart of, you know, this technology hub, right, known as Silicon Valley. So that made it very easy for me to, number one, network and build relationships and get jobs at these cool companies doing the things I like to do. So,
yeah,
you know, and I didn't grow up saying, you know, I'm not a social media veteran. I haven't been doing social media for 15 years like some people, because I didn't grow up and say, I want to be a social media rock star when I grow up. I just kind of stumbled across it, and it, you know. Yeah. And so the piece of advice I give to everybody is, number one, start a blog. And I know it's not, I know it sounds so elementary, but you need to have some online representation of who you are and what you know, and talk about your learning and help teach people as you learn, and make that the place where people can go, because that's how I got my job at Yahoo. Was one of my readers was a VP, and so you know that to me is huge. And start using the tools and understand how they work, and start building your own personal brand and your own community. At the same time, however, there's a huge argument in companies my size about that personal branding and the company brand and what happens if there's a disconnect, right? So, for example, I think I have a pretty decent-sized community of people who value what I say, and they all know I work for Intel. Well, what happens when I leave Intel, right? So I have my Twitter profile, and I have my Intel logo there, and I have I talk about Intel about 20% of the time. So, you know, when you talk about profiles and profile creation, you know, there's a huge debate going on internally at companies the size of this, and that is, should they be personal profiles, or should they be kind of the Richard at Dell profile or Michael at Intel profile? And, you know, so there's good arguments on both sides of the coin. I tend to agree that the personal brand is better, and I think Rohit from Ogilvy had mentioned this, that companies should start investing and looking for people who already have personal brands. So that they can leverage those brands for the company.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that if people have connections to bring to the table, it's a much better situation, or if they have, you know, positive relationships that they foster. So, you know, for me, you know, I'm involved in Social Media Club as well, as you know, and we'll be hosting the June event, and we'll be talking about B2B social networking.
And so I'd love to attend.
Well, you're going to attend. You have to. So that's coming up for us in June. And, you know, being on the planning committee, you see like a lot of, you know, just even the difference between what's going on in the Silicon Valley and people really trying to keep interest and events even local, because like you said, so much is happening right there. But there's also what's happening in San Francisco. So it's kind of bridging the two. Our firm luckily has a small office in San Francisco and its headquarters in Mountain View. So while I'm in Mountain View most of the time, if I have events in the evening or whatever, I can either hop on the freeway and in the middle of the day finish my day in San Francisco, or I can do the whole day in San Francisco and feel like I'm getting a little dose of both places, because I think there's different kinds of innovation happening in both places.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting too, just in the nature of the work. I don't know. I feel like there are more maybe creative types.
Yeah.
In San Francisco.
I think there is too. I mean, you have all the agencies there, and you know, I was up there. Our agency is Razorfish, well, one of our agencies, and you know, I go to their offices, and all those people are just extremely creative, and it just makes me feel like a geek, you know, kind of a nerd, because I'm not nearly as creative as they are. It's funny that you say that, though, because, you know, I go to San Francisco a lot. In fact, I attended this OMMA social conference maybe 2 or 3 months ago, and I'm seeing all these people who I recognize. And it's funny because I've never met them before, but I recognize them through Twitter. And so this guy, Tom O'Brien, and he works at an agency back in New Jersey, I think. And he's like, hey, I know you. How are you? I'm Tom on Twitter. I'm like, oh, Tomob, because that's his handle. I'm like, yeah, what's up? So we were just talking, and you know, you start calling people by their handles. It's pretty crazy, but it's super fun. I love it.
Yeah, it's a totally different world, and people, you know, when you get into that space where you're with people that kind of speak the language as you were referring to, you know, the other people in the room are like, what is going on here? This is not normal English.
No,
what are you talking about?
It's funny because I feel kind of stupid, you know, at times during meetings when I'm like, yeah, I tweeted this, and everybody's like, what the hell does that mean? You know, and these are like traditional marketers with MBAs from, you know, Stanford or something, and they're like looking at me like I'm a 12-year-old. And I think part of that, again, is just kind of, you know, influencing and changing the culture internally. And I'm learning how to talk in 140 characters at home to my kids, and it's like driving me insane.
So one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, you know, you're a strategist, so obviously part of your role is to think at the sort of 3,000 feet, you know, above everything level and really see the strategic vision. And of course, there's got to be tactical pieces to your job. You're talking about writing blog posts, you know, you're getting into WordPress, you're doing these sort of tactical things that help support that strategy. How do you find that sweet spot in the middle to communicate with the folks in your company who, like you said, are going, what the heck is a tweet?
Mm-hmm. Well, number one, I prefer the tactical. I love blogging, and so I don't mind, you know, rolling up my sleeves. And I love the high level, you know, and it's not hard. When you think of social media and our kind of overall strategy for Intel, it's very simple. Amplify Intel, build community, empower employees, engage others, and expand the conversation. That's the strategy. And the tactics are the tools that we use to do that, right? Whether it be Twitter or a Facebook application or our corporate blogs or, you know, guest posting on Dell or Digital Nomads. So, you know, it's tough. There is no sweet spot. You know, I try to evangelize. And at times, and this is completely transparent, I feel at times I have to justify social media to management here at times. Not everyone, because I think a lot of people get it, but there are some people who still don't find any value or see the ROI. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely hard to assign a monetary value to a comment left in Facebook on a posted item that I put about Intel, right? So I use my personal Facebook profile, and I post Intel-related content there. I also post pictures of my kids. So, you know, when somebody leaves a comment saying, hey, I think I'm going to go get one of those netbooks, well, what's the monetary value of that? Do we believe what they say? Is it $400, which is the price of a netbook? Is it that minus, you know, or is it just the margin that Intel makes? Or I don't know. So I feel like at times I'm always having to justify the work that we do and show clear examples of how Intel is making progress and influencing people. It's tough, though, because I hate to say we're influencing purchase behavior, because that kind of sounds not very authentic. But I think in reality we are. It's completely impossible to measure, completely, because, number one, we don't sell directly to consumers. It's, you know, being an ingredient brand, it's you know, someone's not going to go buy a Core 2 Duo chip or a Core i7. I mean, they're going to buy a Dell or they're going to build their own. And so, you know, it's tough. It really is. I don't have a direct answer for you, Jennifer, but, you know, it's every meeting I'm in when I'm talking about our plans or, you know, going over reviews, I talk about the value that it's bringing to the community.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's that whole concept, too, and, you know, I'm definitely not the person that founded this term, but Adam Metz, who I'm sure you know, talks about it in his ebook, There Is No Secret Sauce, about the looking at things from a level of return on participation, which reminds me of something like word of mouth. So I really wonder sometimes if the value and measurement is really going to come down to the equivalent of how you would measure word of mouth advertising. It's really hard to quantify.
It's definitely hard to quantify. It is. And, you know, I mean, we look at, I hate to say this, and you know, we look at traditional web metrics also. I mean, we look at, you know, how many visitors are coming, how many, you know, YouTube views, how many, you know, Facebook fans, how many retweets, and things like that. We look at growth rates between, you know, month to month with RSS subscriptions. We look at comments. And so that helps paint kind of somewhat of a picture, but it's not the full picture, right? And I think with word of mouth, that's the same struggle. You can only capture what you can capture. You can't capture everything.
That's true. That's very true. You should only try to tackle what you can do well, which I think plays well to your point about start with a blog. You know, start with something that you can use and manage and share, and also listen. So, you know, commenting, being enabled is really key, because if you don't have the ability to listen to anybody that wants to talk to you, then what's the point of being there in the first place?
Right.
So I wanted to ask you, you know, positive impact-wise, you or your company, you know, what kind of things come to mind?
What do you mean?
Like, have you done any nonprofit? Has Intel
have
any nonprofit initiatives or anything that really allow you to kind of get out of the ROI frame of mind and just, you know, I mean, we have, for example, in my case, we have some pro bono clients, so I can go in and work with them and feel like, wow, we're really doing something important to help with healthcare in Baja, Mexico.
Right.
So, you know, I'm assuming Intel probably does something in the nonprofit sector, or just, you know, maybe communication that's happened in forums that's been really positive that's helped open people's eyes.
You know, I don't work on, I mean, we have a corporate affairs group, and they focus a lot on the nonprofit and kind of, you know, external real community building. Excuse me. But one example comes to mind, and I can't recall, I feel embarrassed because I can't recall the name of the site. I want to say it was SaveTheChildren.org or COM or something. But
it'll
just
come to you while you're talking, I'm sure.
It will. And basically what it is, it was a partnership with Intel and Kiva and another agency, and basically we would donate 25 cents for every click on the site. And it was educating people about something. And, you know, we promoted it using our social media tools. I tweeted it, I want to say, I don't know, a month ago. And it was retweeted about 150 times. I mean, I stopped counting at 150.
Wow.
And
awesome.
Yeah, I know. And you look at the metrics, and I mean, it's difficult to really measure the reach of that, because I'm sure that, you know, you can look at people's followers, but how many of those followers actually saw it, how many of those followers overlap each other, things like that. But I looked at the first like 20, and I counted like 85,000 total followers to those 20. And, you know, so, you know, you do the math and you can probably figure, you know, get a close number to potential reach of that message. But I do know that the traffic to that site, I mean, it skyrocketed for like an hour, right, with all the tweets.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, Intel is very involved. We don't tell people, we don't really communicate it as effectively as I think we should, but that's not my call.
Part of why I'm asking.
Because
I think it's always important. I found out last week in interviewing another social media luminary that Cisco was doing a really great thing. And, you know, maybe Cisco's ears are burning, but, you know, I wanted to make sure that Intel had its time in the sun to talk about anything that it might be doing that is really making a positive impact out there. And that sounds like a really great initiative that you were a part of. So, you know, we only have a couple minutes here, and I always ask this question because I'm a new media veteran, which turned into social media, and worked for the 5 broadcast networks. And I remember the only other startup that I've worked at, so I'm not at a startup now, but my job before was a startup, so I've worked at 2 startups in my life. And the first one was, he loved to use the word pioneer, that we were pioneering. It was before new media was even really a term. It was in the late 90s, so it's big on pioneer, pioneer, pioneer. But we are. If you look at, you know, kind of what the actual definition of a pioneer is, that's what we're doing right now. And that's why I think we see so much dialogue, and I think the discourse amongst one another about what we do and sharing best practices is so important. Because like you said, there is no one expert. There's people that can afford to or are, you know, have a lot of, you know, what we call social capital to be able to be flown here and there to speak. But really what it comes down to is, you know, being in a space where we are constantly innovating, looking for things new, sharing best practices. What's that like? So people, you know, it ties in kind of with your, what's the most commonly asked question, you know, they want, how do I become you, or how do I get your job? What is it like to have your job?
Well, it's definitely fulfilling to me, just because, you know, I've always had that nature to want to help people. You know, a friend calls me, wants, you know, he's moving next week. I'm there to help move the boxes. That's just in my DNA. And, you know, I'm not passionate about moving boxes, though. I mean, I'm passionate about social media and the tools and technology And so to me, it's very fulfilling. It's rewarding. And, you know, I don't think very many people can say, you know what, I love to come into work every day. And I can honestly say, and sometimes, you know, there are down days when days aren't going as well as I wish they could. But for the most part, I mean, I come to work every day, and I love coming to work. I love the people I work with. I love my responsibilities. And the minute those responsibilities change, I'm not going to be a happy camper. But, you know, it's as far as being a pioneer, I mean, you know, who knows, right? I mean, what's going to – there's social media, just like search. I mean, 10 years ago, search was, you know, I remember when Overture first started selling search ads, or, you know, and people were – the community was outraged because, you know, they were manipulating the search engines. And now it's a multi-billion, high ROI-driven industry. And who knows what social media is going to be like, right? Maybe we'll be on to pioneering the next big thing. I have no idea what it could be. But, you know, 5-10 years from now, we're going to look back and you know, I'm going to ask myself, did I make an impact? And hopefully I did, either to someone or certain group of people. But for me, it's you know, I know that it would rub well for some people's egos to be, you know, visionaries and pioneers and of new technology, of a new kind of channel of communication. For me, I just like, you know, I'm like the ugly guy at the prom. You know, I'm just happy to be here.
Oh, you know? Now. I have seen high school photos of you on Facebook.
You've seen high school photos?
Tagged. Mysteriously untagged. They were tagged for like 2 seconds, Michael.
Yes. Number one rule, do not tag me unless you let me know first.
I know. The same thing's happening to me, though. What is it with people with enough time? I mean, I shouldn't say that because people say that about me all the time. But, you know, I've got somebody who's going to grammar school. He's doing this big grammar school project, and he's posting our pictures page by page. I'm thinking, oh, my God.
Yeah.
That was the summer my aunt gave me a horrible haircut and went back to school with some sort of weird Dorothy Hamill curly thing.
Dorothy Hamill. Yeah, I'm surprised you brought that up.
I like to hit you with some surprise, you know, some element of nice surprise anyway. Hopefully those were good years for you when you were pioneering something else.
Yeah, not so much, like a mullet, yeah.
No, I thought you looked good. You didn't look bad.
Oh, my gosh. I looked horrible.
Well, take a look at my pictures.
I'm going to do a search, too.
You're going to find all of it. Because I haven't untagged mine. Because I figure once it's out there, it's just out there. Oh, boy, did I have some interesting phases myself. But anyway, this is all in the spirit of social media and what you find out about each other and how connected you might feel to someone, even though you and I have physically met one time. I feel like, you know, you're a name that comes to mind for a lot of different things when it comes to community, user building, and the kind of brand position that you're in. And I want to thank you for joining us today. We got to wrap up now and thank everybody that's listened, those especially that have chatted for this session of Breakthrough the Noise with me, Jennifer Lindsay. Next week, I want to let you know our guest is Michael Singer. He's a great friend of mine, and he's also the West Coast editor for Information Week. So that's 1 week from today at 12 noon. As always, you can keep up with the latest on this show and Eastwick in general at blogs.eastwick.com. And I want to wish everyone a great, happy, and healthy weekend. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.